Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast where geeky TV junkies
watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts,
Jin Lin
and Isaac.
It's been a long day.
Okay, sure.
And you just woke up from a nap.
I am technically awake from a nap.
I just got home from a facial, and then after this, we're doing something.
I wouldn't say that I am awake. I am in a state of not sleeping. Go on.
If listeners can hear that, that's me gently slapping his face.
Okay.
Did that help?
No. What are we doing today?
Today, we are talking about Season 2 of Star Trek Lower Decks.
The what?
Star Trek Lower Decks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I've watched that.
You have.
Right.
So, listeners, if you have not watched Season 2 of Star Trek Lower Decks, available on Paramount Plus, this is your one and only warning, as we're going to, you know, dive in and spoil it all.
Yeah, it's spoilers, because this is such a story heavy, plot driven show. But yeah, there's going to be spoilers.
I have a question for you after watching season two.
Go on.
How does it hold up to season one? Or is it kind of about the same?
Good question. I think it's about the same.
I was thinking that too, story wise.
Yeah, it's not. Okay. It's not better, it's not worse. It's really about the same. I think that the only difference is there are story elements that draw from things that happened in season one. And I don't need to beat around the bush here because we already gave a spoiler warning. So there are story elements from, Boimler leaving the group to go take his promotion to the Titan. But otherwise, you wouldn't really be able to tell the difference for any of the episodes.
Oh, and the Shaxx guy comes back from the dead.
Yes. But that only plays a part in one episode, in episode two. Otherwise, they don't ever mention it again, that he was dead and came back to life.
And it's actually a taboo if you ask, officers, how are you back? So what happened?
Wait, were you dead? Ensign, nobody report for reassignment immediately. Yeah. So other than that, yeah, I don't, to answer your question, I don't think that there is really a difference between, say, the quality or the story structure necessarily of any of the episodes between seasons one and two. If you tried to play them randomly, for the latter part of season two, I think they are interchangeable for any of the episodes in season one.
I would like to say that I think Mariner had a little bit of character development this season.
Well, at least initially, right? Because, they have her making up with her mom at the end of season one. And so at the beginning of season two, she and her mom are working together and it's annoying the shit out of Ransom, right? He's like, you guys don't even like each other, stop. And he becomes one of those god things. And
Randall Park, he voices in that first episode.
And Randall Park, I would know from
Fresh Off the Boat.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He's the dad.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was funny.
I was like, I mean, the name sounds familiar, but, you know, I don't know actors' names.
I think she did a little bit of growing. In that episode where Boimler's back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like,
I mean, he comes back in episode two. So before we get into that, though, I want to say the one thing that I was disappointed about with this episode was we only got one episode that kind of had a crazy William Riker like doing stuff on a ship.
I know.
And it was just a few like 20 second scenes, and like that was it.
Yeah, it was just a few lines in that one episode.
And I get it, right?
I was disappointed too.
Yeah, I was like, I get it that, like, you don't want to,
it's
like,
not his show, so it makes sense that he's a guest star, but he only showed up for a few seconds.
Yeah.
They didn't even bring back, I forgot what's her name.
Deanna Troi?
Yeah, they didn't bring back Deanna.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think she was going to play up the comedy act, so I don't think it necessarily would have fit. But I did see that William Riker was wearing his wedding ring, so he is, you know, theoretically still married to her. And she's probably still on the ship. Just, she didn't feature in any of the scenes. But what I'm saying is, I get that they didn't necessarily want to have to do this weird thing of having Boimler and the Titan crew B-plot and the Lower Decks A-plot for every episode. But I would have liked to see more cameos of that happening. Now, the way that they got Boimler back on the Cerritos.
Oh, I love this one. This is a total callback to The Next Generation with the transporter clone.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, in fact, Boimler foreshadows it earlier. He's like, because he's naming off all of, like, Riker's exploits, and he's like, oh, you know, there's even a clone of Captain Riker, Thomas Riker, and, you know, so he calls back to it before it happens to him, and he's like, oh, I got Rikered. yeah, I think that was good, because it allows, like, the Boimler, like, oh, hey, he's actually good at his job, because it's strange for, like, a good officer like Brad Boimler, if he's surrounded by people that are only kind of good at their jobs, it would be strange that he never gets promoted. Which is not to say that, like, Tendi and Rutherford and Mariner are not good at their jobs. It's just that in the show, they kind of show that he is, like, 100% like the kind of officer that Starfleet is looking for, like always following regulations and everything. So it'd be strange that he doesn't make it to lieutenant, especially when you have, like, Worf as a lieutenant in The Next Generation. I don't know. I feel like Worf was not a very competent officer.
Ouch.
I mean, if you look at the way he was written, like, he was always the guy that suggested the dumb thing to be rejected. And a lot of times it was sort of, like, out of aggression or honor or something weird. And, I mean, I think that there were a few occasions where he did get to shine, and we may have talked about a few of those on our Star Trek The Next Generation episodes.
Yeah, last year.
But yeah, you know, in general, I feel like he wasn't really that competent. And that, I don't know, it's tough to not meta that. It's like, well, that was probably the writer's fault, but, you know, you can't. It's like, well, but then that's what the character ended up being. So whether or not the writer, obviously the writers made it that way, but because they made it that way, like, he's an incompetent officer. Well, not incompetent, but not as competent as you might expect. So I don't know. I thought that was a good way to get Boimler back on the ship, and then they, you know, added the extra comedy of, oh, and you're going to have to be busted back down to Ensign for no reason. like, he just has to be an Ensign now.
And the worst, one of the things that he didn't like was that his clone didn't volunteer to leave. He did. So his clone gets to stay on the Titan and continue the adventures of Riker.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Which is the perfect sort of humor, I expect, from Lower Decks.
Yeah. He's like, wait, I thought we were both going to step forward. And then it was going to be like, oh, no, nope, I'm good. You go.
Oh, our kitty, she's meowing.
So, back to your idea of Beckett Mariner growing. So, in that one episode, at least, she and her mom decide, okay, you know what? We were just both faking it. We don't need to work together. I think the next episode where Boimler is still not back on the Cerritos is the one where she does actually show some real character change, but I don't think that it holds. And that's the one where they're packing up that collectorship. And
wasn't that episode 3?
That was episode 2, I'm pretty sure. Because the first episode was where Ransom turns into a god and they have to calm him down.
Yeah.
And the next episode, this is the same episode where Boimler is trying to infiltrate the Packlid camp.
Okay, because this is the same episode that I enjoyed because
of the clone, yeah.
No, not just the clone.
Okay.
The Darmok and Jalad guy.
Oh, yeah, the Temerian.
Temerian, why can I never remember these names?
The second episode does introduce the first Temerian officer in Starfleet.
I love it.
And no, he actually, you know, is part of the crew now, so.
His Federation standard is really good. His English.
Yeah, his Federation. Well, sometimes it doesn't quite come through, and he says something in Temerian, like, Shaka, his eyes red. He's saying it hurts. Yeah, I know. I understand context.
I love the Temerians.
So, in that second episode, actually where we're first introduced to this new Temerian lieutenant, who does actually get more time on the show, unlike William Riker.
I'm okay with that.
The Beckett Mariner does actually, I feel, grow in that episode. I don't know that it sticks, but she and the person that she is competing with, both realize that they are not necessarily the best to be in command as they're trying to get through the ship, because Rutherford and Tendi are like, oh yeah, we could have just done this thing. And both of them ask, like, well, why didn't you guys say something earlier? And they're like, well, you were in charge. And so, you know, they both realize that they should, you know, not necessarily be so gung-ho to be in charge, regardless of their opposing leadership styles. But then I don't think that Mariner really changes after that. She's still just as impulsive and controlling. Like, she...
What about that episode towards the end where she and Boimler were carrying that felonious computer?
Right. I just finished rewatching that one.
Okay.
Because,
like, I feel like I don't think she was that impulsive in that episode like she normally would be.
She wasn't. No, I was thinking about, there were two episodes before that where she was the episode where there was a Dupler on the ship and she and Boimler were trying to get into the Starfleet after party at one of the conferences on a starbase.
Oh, yeah.
And she is just, you know, still, like, doing all the crazy things. And then there's another episode where, it was that episode where I felt like she hadn't grown up. The one where they were escorting that that computer. And it was because she reassigned Boimler behind his back to get him on that mission instead of going to fight giant centipedes. she made it so Boimler got reassigned to spend time with her because she didn't think that was up to the task of fighting giant centipedes.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually kind of a dick mood.
Yeah.
As his supposed friend.
Right. Now, if it was, we're not privy to her inner thoughts. It could be that she thought that that she just wanted to have Boimler along because they're friends. When he said, Boimler could have said to her, you got me reassigned because you didn't think I was good enough. And that was enough of an out for her to be like, oh yeah, it's not just because I like you and I wanted you to be along for this trip. Yeah, I just don't think you're good enough. I don't think that's the case. It could be the case, but I don't think that's the case just because that was just not the voice intonation that she had. They didn't make it seem like she was trying to cover up a real reason. She was just like, yeah, I don't think you're ready. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't think that's ever really going to come up again. So they gave her a few episodes where she kind of changed, but not really. And I think that's probably going to be, a recurring thing.
And Brad's always going to be our Boy Scout.
Yeah, Brad's always going to be our Boy Scout. In fact, I think that they may have wiped Rutherford's memory in season one just so that they could have him continue being the same person. I don't know. I will say I liked the episode where Tendi and Ta'ana. No, that's Dr. Ta'ana.
Tendi and Mariner went to get Dr. Ta'ana's,
grandmother's sex-scratching post, but all she wanted was the box.
I don't care about the post. I just want the box.
I don't care about that stupid post. I just want the box. She said old, but I don't care about that old post. I just wanted the box. She just runs away. No, what did it turn out Tendi's first name was, though? It was, Davala, I think. Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah. And I think that was news to us as
the viewer.
As viewers,
I really don't remember.
Yeah, I mean,
if they brought up her.
If
first
they said
name.
It, yeah. If they ever said it before, it was like once, and then it was just like Tendi after that.
Never referenced again.
Yeah,
I will say I did enjoy having those two be on a mission together because the girls are never together. It's usually just the whole group. Or Mariner and Boimler.
Mariner and Boimler, Rutherford and Tendi, is how it generally split up in season one.
Yeah, so it's nice to see a little change for that episode where the girls had something to do.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's why they did it. They realized what their formula was, and they were like, well, we can make it work with a different formula. And I thought they did. It went over well. It also...
Oh my God! Remember when she had to do green face?
Yes. Yes. They'll kill you on sight if you're a human. So that was. I liked that episode. Watching it, it was a little frustrating for all the times that the post just got more and more wrecked.
It's beyond repair.
Yeah, but in the end, when Dr. Ta'ana was like, I don't care about that old post, I just wanted the box. It made the frustration less frustrating in hindsight. I don't know. Yeah, so I like it better now. But I know during that first watching of that episode, I was thinking like, oh, seriously, another setback? Like, are they... I don't know. I was trying to think of other ways that they could solve the problem. Like, well, why don't they just, replicate it or something? I feel like there's some magic that they should have. Speaking of magic, one episode I thought was particularly hilarious was the one where Lieutenant Commander, starts with the B, the chief engineer.
Steve?
Yeah.
He turned out to be a prince, and he abdicated his,
No, he didn't abdicate. Well, yeah, sorry, he did. He did.
He did. He gave up that, he abdicated the royal life.
The throne.
Yeah.
And his mom is trying to get him to have sex because under law that makes him king.
That is hilarious.
No, I thought, well, the hilarious part, I thought, was like how they gave very scientific names. They changed them all to sound magical. What is his name? It starts with a B. It's going to drive me insane. Anyway, he was like, there's something wrong with the dragon's breath or something like that. And
the engine.
And Rutherford's like, what? He's like, oh, yeah, sorry. They gave magical names to everything. It's the subspace something or other.
Oh, it wasn't the engine.
Yeah. And then Rutherford's like, oh, okay. And then he does a scan. He's like, so the elves grid. And he's like, no, don't do that. Oh, sorry. I liked the idea of that there's a society out there that takes our medieval fantasy, takes science fiction and then turns it into medieval fantasy sounding stuff. I also like it when people, I don't know, want to have sex. And so they're all throwing themselves at the chief engineer. It's like, oh yeah. Yeah, I like that episode. But see, that's another one of those that like that could have happened in season one and you wouldn't, there's no reason you would.
There's nothing to distinguish between season two from season one.
Yeah, unless they bring up the fact that Boimler served on the Titan, or unless they bring up the fact that Shax died, which they won't, other than that one episode for Shax dying. So they're not really, there's no other plot lines that they refer back to, except they've got this one. Now, I kind of want to ask you about this. I wanted to see if you noticed. They've got this one underlying thread that's going on, and that's with the pack lids. Did you notice that was, like, the story arc?
No.
Yeah, so I don't remember exactly what it was with the pack lids in season one, but if I recall correctly, the Packlids are a really dumb species that only acquire space travel through stealing other people's technology. And so the only reason they're a threat is they just steal other people's guns and then just, like, mount all of them on one ship or something. And so it becomes a really powerful ship.
So they're scavengers.
Yeah, but they're really dumb. Anyway, so in this season, we do see more of sort of whatever that story arc is supposed to be, and it shows up several times, like where the bridge crew were trying to get a ceasefire with the Packlids on planet Packlid, where we find out that there's a Klingon that was supplying the Packlids with supplies and telling them how to get the Viruvian ore that they needed for the Viruvian bombs. I think the Packlids are the, you know, in some seasons of Star Trek, there's like a main enemy, and I think they're going with Packlids for Lower Decks, which is sort of appropriate because the Cerritos is supposed to be like the least important ship in the fleet, so they would have the least important main enemy.
So the Cerritos is the California class.
Is a California class ship.
California class ship. Okay, so in the Federation, a California class ship is one of the lower, is the lowest level or one of the lowest
that's,
level
I mean,
ships?
That's what they're, I don't know.
Is that canon from previous?
I don't know. I don't think so. Because there are, like, there's the Galaxy class ship, which is the Enterprise D, which which is the original for the next generation. Right. And then there's the Sovereign class, which is the new sort of flagship style, which is the Enterprise E. And I don't know that they talk too much about the other class ships like that in the Next Generation. They may have mentioned it more, say, in Deep Space Nine, but Deep Space Nine really didn't have that many Federation ships coming around that often. They got the Defiant at one point, which was their own sort of Federation ship to do stuff with, and it was a battleship. And then there was Voyager, and I don't remember what class it was, but it's not the same. So, you know, I think that they made it up for Lower Decks. Maybe they didn't, because there is a lot of lore that I guess happens outside of the shows. And it could be that the creators were like, well, what's the crappiest class ship that we think we can get away with? And they, I don't know, California class existed. I'm not sure. But, yeah, in the show, at least, they are like, yeah, no one respects California class ships. Because, I mean, if you remember in that episode that we were just talking about where Boimler and Beckett were trying to sneak into that after party, Captain, what's her name?
Freeman?
Captain Freeman, yeah. Sorry, her last name isn't Mariner, and so it's like, anyway, Captain Freeman tries to get into the party, and they're like, nope, sorry, you're California class. It's, I don't know, something and up. Oh, no, they actually say that to Beckett. When Boimler successfully impersonates William Boimler, they let him in, and then he's like, yeah, she's my plus one. And the guy's like, no, Beckett Mariner, Cerritos, California class. Sorry, it's, I want to say Nuremberg class and up or something. It was something like that. It may not have been Nuremberg, but it was something like that. Mm. So, yeah, they're the running gag in the show is that the California class is like the crappiest or one of the crappiest assignments to be on. Billups. That was it.
Let's wait a second. Do it again.
Billups. That was it. His name is Lieutenant Commander Andy Billups. He is the chief engineer of the Cerritos.
He looked like a Steve to me. I forgot his name. He looked like a Steve to me.
Yeah, I forgot his name because you said Steve, and I was like, yeah, that's his first name. Uh-huh. But no, it's not. It's Andy Billups. Lieutenant Commander Andy Billups is a prince of some place that is awesome.
I did enjoy the fantasy like elements of that kingdom.
Yeah, I did. I really like that. But speaking of Rutherford, I forgot his name was Samanthan. Tindy yells it in one of the episodes. She's like, Samanthan Rutherford. And I'm like, oh right, that's his name. he could be Sam, but no, Samanthan.
Those two need to get together already.
You think? I like the fact that there's no romance. I like that they are just genuinely like good friends everywhere, and I think they're actually playing that up for the show, to be like, yeah, this is what it takes to be in Starfleet. Like, you're just a super friendly hardcore nerd about something. And so, like, when Tindy, I think it's in episode one where Tindy notices that Rutherford likes pears and is going on a date with this girl again. And
she's like, he didn't like pears before. Something's wrong with his brain.
Yeah.
Let me open up his skull.
Yeah. she's so Beckett, it, you know, sort of makes the same assumptions that we would, right? Like, oh, you're just sort of in love with him and you're worried that because of this memory loss that he's not going to come around to you or that he's going to, you know, fall in love with this other woman. And she's like, what? No, nothing like that. It could be that he's got this this brain thing. And it turns out that she was lying about that, but not in the way that you expect. She was lying about it, but she was just worried that if he suddenly liked pears and also suddenly liked this girl, it could mean that he could suddenly not like her anymore and they wouldn't be friends anymore. And that's what she was worried about. But they were, I recall, in the end, able to reverse some of his neural pathways, and he no longer likes pears again. He thinks they're bland and mealy.
It's such a random fruit to have a strong opinion about.
Right.
I don't like pears anymore.
No, I also liked, there was an episode where he and Tindy were trying to build a model ship of the Cerritos, but he couldn't quite get something to come online. And he's like, oh God, previous me is smarter than me and I can't stand it. It was actually, in fact, that same episode with a Dupler. Because they're running around the ship trying to get away from the Dupler so they can have some peace and quiet to finish this model ship. And Tindy eventually tells him, like, what? No, we never got past this part. We always stopped at the warp core and then disassembled it and started all over again because as long as we were working on this, people would just leave us alone. And he's like, oh, great. I'm not dumber than me. So... yeah, I like their interaction, but I really do like that they're friends, and I like that both Beckett and Boimler have the same reaction every time somebody insinuates that they are romantically involved.
Ew.
Ew. No. Even like whether they're both there or whether only one of them's there, they both have that reaction of like, what? No, that's not it. I like that they're friends. I like that they just, you know, like to be together. I like the dynamic between Boimler and Beckett where they're always sort of busting each other's balls. I think that Boimler is unfortunately still going to keep becoming a good officer, and they're going to have to, like... he does seem to grow, like when he started running with the red shirts to become acting, to get that acting captain assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Tindy was that giant scorpion, he's like, nope, I'll just make a fool of myself and that will fix the issue. Like, the red shirts thought he made a fool of himself and that was the end of it. But Ransom was like, that showed good leadership. Good job. And so he keeps doing stuff like that and showing that he's like a good officer. And so I think it's going to have to become more and more ridiculous that he keeps getting held back.
Oh, you just reminded me of an episode I really enjoyed. Oh my God. It's that one where they were doing those tests.
Mm-hmm.
And Boimler got stuck with the Borg test.
Oh, yeah. And he just keeps doing it. Yeah.
He kept doing it and doing it because he knew he could score better. And it got to a point where, okay, well, now you have to keep doing it to buy the captain time.
Yeah. He's like, okay, you got to, it's like he's at 100% on the impossible level of a holodeck test. And he's like, okay, finally got it. Well, we need you not to complete it. And that broke him.
Oh, God, that was a good one.
So I think that that kind of thing is going to happen more often, where he displays some ability that he's really, really good at being an officer, and then they're going to throw something that completely breaks him. Now, this seriously broke him. I think it would be funnier if it was always some misunderstanding from a higher-up officer. Like, he's doing something. He, in fact, saves the day, but instead, somebody walks in and he's, I don't know, slipping on a pie or something. Not that, obviously, but, you know, something equally ridiculous, and the higher up officer goes, "Oh yeah, good work, Boimler," you know, all sarcastically, because they didn't see him save the day. All they did was see him like shit his pants or something. I think that would be funnier if done infrequently. I don't want it to turn into like a Bob's Burgers situation where they're always dangling like, "Oh hey, you can have a good life," and then some stupid thing is always going to mess it up.
Like when Bob got stuck to the toilet when he had to do that interview.
Yeah, or I forget what ruined the food truck thing. But yeah, they had the food truck thing was going well for them, and it just suddenly couldn't.
Oh, his kids were lying.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Is this vegan?
Yeah, is this vegan grass? Cruelty free vegan beef. Yeah.
Oh man.
So I think that could be funnier. That could be a funny way of keeping Boimler where he's at. I mean, it's, and if I think about it, like, all of them seem to have that quality. Like, Rutherford is incredibly good at engineering, but I mean, Rutherford was incredibly good at security too. Like, he could have easily been promoted there. If you remember in season one when he wanted to be able to join Tendi for, I don't know, watching some nebula or something, but he was going to be in the Jeffries tubes or something. And so he changed careers just so that he could do that. But then it turned out, you know, he liked engineering the best. And then, you know, at least for Tendi, it makes sense a little bit that she is not getting promoted immediately because
medical is hard.
Well, and she's, this was in one of the episodes, she's kind of not very assertive. And so it's easy for her to get overshadowed by more assertive medical officers. Though I think she's worked on that, and so that may not be a character trait of hers any longer. We'll see. But at least, and you know, it makes sense that Beckett keeps getting busted down because she's like the ultimate, like, I do what I want, and I'm not going to follow Starfleet protocol because what you would consider in Dungeons and Dragons, chaotic good, like. She just wants it to be good, or maybe neutral good. She doesn't care about what the regulations are. She just wants to do good, especially in season one. No, maybe that is something that you could sort of draw the line between seasons one and season two, is Beckett, especially in the first episode in season one, she's breaking protocol, but she's breaking protocol to do something nice for people. No, that's the same thing in episode one of season two. Like, she was breaking protocol, though she did ask permission from her mom to clean off all the dirt on the
murals.
Yeah, the murals in public spaces, and then that got all the grime off and allowed the whatever that device was to get its solar power and turn Ransom into a ransom god. Yeah, maybe not. Okay.
Okay, well, what would you like to see in the future?
I want to see more of William Riker and his ridiculous antics. Even if it's in a limited capacity. Like, he's in, say, two or three episodes where the story with the Pakleds is getting further progressed. So they're calling on the Titan to, you know, investigate something, and the Cerritos is there to back them up. And then so there's one, you get this awesome interplay between the two Boimlers, where one is obviously jealous of the other because he's still on the Titan, right?
Yeah.
And one's back at the Cerritos. Now, it could also be that it could be an interesting twist where they end up wanting to switch because Riker is so, like, crazy. And because, you know, Boimler was a little uncomfortable with, like, the crazy stuff that was going on the Titan.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that William Boimler has finally gotten his fill and Brad Boimler is like, oh, yeah, I want to go back. That's fun. And so there could be a switcheroo there where they decide to switch. And something interesting. Now, the way I would make that more interesting is I would have Beckett and Boimler start a romantic relationship and then the switch is done in secret. And William doesn't know that he's supposed to be
dating
Mariner. And it doesn't have to be Mariner. It could be someone else. That would also be fine. But in fact, it would probably work better if it was not Mariner. That way it can just be some rando on the ship. That would be good. So that that would be a funny thing to have. But yeah, that's what I would want is more Captain Riker and the Titan and crazy things happening. Even if it's just a few times, right? Just so that it's a treat when Riker shows up.
Yeah.
In the episodes. Kind of like when Q shows up on The Next Generation. You're like, ooh, this is going to be an interesting episode.
Yeah, because he doesn't show up that often. So you look forward to seeing him when you do see him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say one wish I have for future Lower Deck seasons is, like, I know the show is about the ensigns, obviously. I think it'd be funny to have a few side plots of, like, the personal lives of the officers.
Of the bridge crew? See, that was actually...
Like Dr. T'Ana. Like, she could... It could kind of be like a funny thing as she starts dating other crew members.
Okay. Well, so that was actually something that I noticed in season two. Okay, that is something that distinguishes season one from season two. There's a lot more... featuring of the bridge crew of the Cerritos, I feel. Whereas in season one, there are more background characters. In season two, Lieutenant Commander Billups, Lieutenant Shax, Captain Freeman, and Commander Ransom are in a lot more episodes, I feel. Or if they're not in more episodes, they are featured more prominently in the episodes that they're in. They're not just like, they're not background characters. And I feel like that is sort of losing sight of the, hey, we want to focus on the lower decks.
Or another idea, they could bring in a new ensign to join the Cerritos. And it turns out that this ensign is a spy.
That could be good. Yeah. Yeah.
You can't go wrong with spy shit. Ooh, not a spy, but a time traveler.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good, a time traveler. I like it. But then you'd have to explain why the 29th century doesn't intervene. And you're like, I don't understand. If you watch Star Trek Voyager, there are several time travel episodes. And Starfleet from the 29th century is always going back to Voyager and being like, hey, stop fucking with the time stream. That's illegal. Don't do it. And Captain Janeway is always like, fuck the 29th century! And, you know, raises both middle fingers and does it anyway.
I still need to watch that. I couldn't get into Deep Space Nine. That pilot was so slow.
Okay. The pilot was slow, but the show is good. I
don't doubt it. I haven't gotten into it.
Like, yeah,
obviously you got me into The Next Generation because you hopped me right in the middle of
season
three.
Yeah, I started you at the end. I think at the end of season. No, it wasn't the end.
It was like middle.
Yeah, I did show you the first few episodes of season three and you were like, eh, it's okay. And I think I was like, okay, let's just skip to the end of season three where it's like Locutus of Borg. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, so Deep Space Nine, I don't know. It has a lot of religious overtones that I don't particularly care for.
Okay, well,
But they get away from that after a while. But I would also say that the first three seasons of Voyager, it's not that the show is bad or poorly produced. It's that the main villain are these Kazons, which are stupid Klingons of the Delta Quadrant, and I hate them. They don't make any sense, and I was very happy when season three was over and they stopped referencing the Kazons. Like, the Kazon story arc, whatever it was done. The show was great after that.
Okay, so for Voyager, what you're saying is I should start with season four. But, you know, read up on the first three seasons, yeah, so I'm not completely lost.
Yeah, because there are other plot lines that happen in seasons one through three that, like, play on.
There's so much Star Trek universe stuff.
Yeah.
You said Picard was coming out with a season two or three?
Two.
A season two later?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you excited?
I don't know. I feel like Picard was really good until the last episode.
We won't get into it.
I mean, I'll just say this. It was really good until the last episode because the last episode felt like the resolution was of the caliber of a standard The Next Generation episode, or maybe a subpar The Next Generation episode. It wasn't as good as the rest of the writing for the show.
Interesting.
Like, the show was really, like, on top of its game with, you know, mystery and intrigue and stuff and different things. And then the resolution at the end of the last episode, I was like, really? That doesn't make any sense. I didn't like it.
So before we wrap up on Lower Decks, we just remembered that we wanted to talk about that Ensign episode and the finale of season two.
Yeah. So
the Ensign episode was so funny.
Well, I really liked it.
Because they show you the lives of all the Ensigns across the different...
the Lower Decks. They don't all use Ensigns as their...
Lower Decks, yeah.
You know, and speaking of that rank thing, that's actually something that sort of changed from The Next Generation to Voyager. So in the next...
What rank thing?
So in The Next Generation, kind of like the lowest ranked person that you ever see on the show is an ensign, right? But
yeah.
That's an actual officer. In Voyager, I don't know if you remember the Lieutenant Tom Paris episode of season two where Boimler has this plate of Lieutenant Tom Paris.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I rewatched that one.
So Tom Paris actually gets busted down below ensign. He gets busted down to crewman in Voyager.
Wow.
So what I'm thinking is, like, all... I don't know... I don't know how the ranks work, but it seems like a lot of these starships should have a bunch of people ranked crewmen. And the, you know, the officers are officers and, you know, have charges of crewmen. But that doesn't seem to be the case on the Cerritos. You just reminded me of that. But yeah, so we get to see the lower decks of these other,
different cultures. Yeah.
Right. And so this is actually kind of what I was alluding to before when I was talking about this Pak-led sub story. This episode is where we find out that there's been this Klingon captain that has been feeding the Pak-leds the Viruvian ore and giving them a Viruvian bomb. And then we find out that the Pak-leds were stupid and, like, they wanted to test the bomb on an asteroid or something to see how, you know, big the explosion would be. But they didn't understand that, you know, bombs can only be used once. So they're like, we wanted to test it on asteroid, but then it broke. And the Klingon is like, of course it broke. It's a bomb. You only get to use it once. So I, yeah, this was certainly furthering along that sub-story of whatever's going on with the Pakleds, we find out that it's a Klingon that had been helping them out. And we find it, and so you earlier talked about it would be cool to have a new ensign on the show. And this is where there was the Vulcan officer that, you know, figured out that there was an anomaly, and that's where the Viruvian bomb had gone off, and they showed up and helped out the Cerritos, but also she had designed a regenerative shield so that the shields would regenerate, and got much higher output from the shields than that Vulcan ship, you know, was used to. And the end result for her was the Vulcan captain was like, I'm reassigning you to Starfleet. Your outbursts will be more tolerated there and not here. So she could end up on the Cerritos. Mm. And then we had that one lower deck guy that became the captain on the Klingon ship. And I love the Pakled ship, because instead of like, you know, in Starfleet, it's red alert, and then there's like, on the Pakled ship, it's like red alarm. it's so dumb. And then, you know, the Pakled lower decks were like, I'm hungry. You should eat. Oh, you're very smart.
Or the Borg ship.
Yeah, the end where they show the lower decks of the Borg ship, is just four people standing there in their pods. I thought that was a good joke. Yeah, so that was interesting. And then in the final episode,
Freeman gets arrested.
Yeah, so the episode itself, I'm not happy with. Because they do the thing, I mean, this is every Star Trek show is guilty of this, but they do this thing where, one, they pretend like they can't go around a thing, even though space is vast and empty. And two, physical objects that are not in warp seem to be traveling much faster than the speed of light. And the size of a starship seems to be, I don't know, an eighth the size of a planet. Like, it's all very ridiculous. And I don't think that Lower Decks was doing that as a funny gag. Like, that's just how Star Trek goes. Like, the planetoid blows up from a mass coronal ejection, like, and it somehow is going fast enough to surprise both starships. I'm like, no, a coronal ejection is going to be going some very, 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 very small fraction of the speed of light. It would take days for this thing to happen, not seconds. And even if it was going the speed of light, it would take minutes for it to traverse the distances that we're talking about in space. So that's the thing. In space, the only things that are going to be surprises to you are going to be things that happen to your ship, like, that you couldn't detect. Like, you run into a rock that you couldn't see, and then you've suddenly got massive decompression or something. But it's not like someone flings a rock at you and then you have to work really hard to avoid it, because at the distances we're talking about, like, you would have so much time to get out of the way. It's ridiculous. But that never happens in Star Trek. But what you wanted to talk about was Captain Freeman gets arrested.
Because I was confused. I was like, wait, is this a mistake?
Yeah, obviously it is. So it may not be only the Klingons that were working with the Pakleds. There could be some other culture that is trying to mess with what's going on with, I don't know, the peace in the star system. Or peace in the galaxy quadrant. So,
But the Cerritos is a lower class ship, so what what are they trying to affect by having this captain arrested?
So I don't think that it's necessarily that they need this captain arrested. I think that what they need is people to think that it was Starfleet that committed this act.
Okay.
So Starfleet is, you know, they're like, oh, shit, well, the evidence that we have is it was us and it was one of our captains. We'll go ahead and take care of that. Or this whoever arrested her is part of a conspiracy within Starfleet.
A mole!
So in season one of The Next Generation, I think it was either the third to last episode of the season or something like that, where Starfleet Command had been infiltrated by like these mind parasite aliens, and they were incredibly hard to detect. It's been so long since I watched the episode, but the thing that sort of gave them away was they were making demands of Starfleet ships that sort of went against the best interest of Starfleet. But they had gotten so far in that I think the entire, like, there was three people on Starfleet High Command at the time, or at least in this episode, and all three of them had been compromised, I think. So one of my friends, back when we were talking about, like, what you would do with more Star Trek The Next Generation movies, he was like, well, what I would do is I would bring back those mind-controlling aliens and have them get really far in between infiltrating Starfleet and have Picard get infected and say half the fleet get infected and then Riker not get infected and he has to then, you know, take on Picard. And I was like, oh, that'd be an interesting thing. So that would be an option here, is that those mind-controlling parasite aliens are back in Starfleet and are sort of trying to sow discord. What else could it be for Captain Freeman? I think that's it. It's got to be some conspiracy, because they obviously didn't set up a Viruvian bomb to take out Paklet. That was obviously either an accident from when the Klingon gave them the additional Viruvian bomb, like they set it off on their own planet by accident, or someone set it off for them in an effort to frame Starfleet, or it's an internal conflict in Starfleet and they're trying to push blame. It's interesting. Well, so not only is Captain Freeman arrested and everyone knows it, but you know, they've got to repair the Cerritos because they, you know, threw off the outer hull. And it was near that planetoid that you can't use energy around somehow. Right? Science fiction-y. Like, if you use energy around the thing, all this stuff will come to you and disable all your electronics. They may have to limp back to a starbase and then get rebuilt or something. I don't know. But I think that, oh, so you remember how I was talking about it would be cool if Boimler had a love interest, and then he switched with William Boimler, and
yeah.
So there was that one alien that Beckett had been being mean to, and they were kind of mean to each other a little bit. But then she saved Beckett during the traversal of the asteroid field that they, for some reason, couldn't just fucking go around.
Was this season one?
No, this is the last episode of season two.
Oh. My memory's bad.
She then gets introduced to the group. So she could be, in addition to the new Vulcan character, she could be a sixth member. And Boimler could have a romantic relationship with her. And then that whole
pull the switcheroo with his transporter clone.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these are just things I think I'd like to see happen. I'm not predicting that they will happen.
Well, we have a whole year to go before season 3 comes out.
Aw.
I know, but there'll be plenty of other shows to get you through the new year. Well, that's a wrap for Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/BINGEABLESPOD.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin MacLeod.